And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
He committed this entire program change, and he gave new life to a fan base.
If they get relative health from those starting five, I think that they're going to be pretty good.
He scores! They've done it again in overtime! Unbelievable! Sagan! They score! They score! Vanek, a hat trick! Vanek just let it fly!
What hurt us more is that now our rotations was kind of just out of disarray. You know, our rhythm was broke, you know, just right from the beginning.
That is a hookup between Collinsworth and McDermott.
I don't think that the world is falling apart. I think that we all want to be great.
I'm not going there. Next question. You tell me.
You tell me. There's been a lot of stuff, right?
Video? Next question.
We love Des Bryant.
He can run the zone read. The RPOs, very exciting.
We help patients. We're teachers. But expectations are always high.
He's always been extremely accurate. He's great in play actions. I think he's got even more room to grow.
Now, welcome in to Wednesday second hour. Happy to have you alongside. All right. I've been having my own issues. You now have yours.
Yeah. Well, they're not mine.
Well, they kind of are.
Kansas City Royals.
Yeah. Doing Royals things.
Last night, Salvador Perez slipped while carrying some luggage and has an MCL tear out 4 to 6 weeks.
Hello, Drew Butera. We hardly knew ye.
Deputy Drew, here we go.
That's right. That's right. Opening montage, Jarrett Sutton on the Michael Porter Jr. Legacy, David Lesky, Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. We were worried about the health of the pitching staff. Little did we know. Fox Sports Midwest, Fox Sports Southwest, Fox Sports Ohio. Winner, winner, winner. Blues win again. 6 straight games now, and 4 of those 6 in overtimes. Bron. Rhythm was broken. David Robinson in there. Dougie McDermott with a layup, courtesy of Fox Sports Southwest, and the lack of defense. David Gettleman continuing to say next question while still arguing the previous question that was asked. Jason Garrett, Jay Gruden, Redskins.com, Andy Reid, NBC Sports Radio, and Mike Zimmer in there as well, NBC Sports Radio. Joining us right now from, let's see, it's still Rock M Nation, right?
It is, yes.
At least for now.
For now.
Okay. And SB Nation. Yep. Okay. And
yep.
Still at SBN_BillC.
Yep.
Okay. How are those conference football previews coming, by the way?
I've got any sort of information that you want on Mac. I'm now complete with 3 conferences in the offseason. Mm-hmm. I've done the Sun Belt Conference USA and Mac. That leaves 7 to go. The Mountain West started, just now, basically.
Okay.
So we are rolling right along. I have made the college football season into a 11-month outing, and we are rolling into months like 3 now.
Okay. Well, normally that 11th month or 12th month was reserved for the tremendous stubble drive. We'll have to come up with something different for that.
That's right. That's probably not going to happen the same way that it's been happening.
Unless you're talking about, you know, no shaven legs or something like that. I don't know. That could be awkward. All right, Bill, let's start on the national scene with college basketball. A couple of hires made. Going from Xavier to Louisville was Chris Mack, and then going as an assistant from Duke to Pitt was Jeff Capel. We kind of thought in the first hour that the Mack move, Chris Mack from Xavier to Louisville, not the conference, but the Mack move was a little bit odd in its placement, but still a 7-year deal. What's the read on both of those hires?
I mean, I liked him. Number one, I congratulate Pitt on finding somebody. That was pretty much the one requirement left, I think, at this point was, hey, will you take the job, please? And they found somebody who said yes, so congratulations to them for that. Capel's got experience, not wonderful experience, but experience. And so it could be a lot worse. It could be the Kevin Stallings hire. I think it's further along than that. So, that's all it is. There's obviously a kind of a major... there was a little bit of a collapse this year. We in Mid-Missouri kind of understand how that works, and we understand that there's at least a path forward, even though this path for Missouri was a little quicker than probably Pittsburgh's is going to be. The other hire, I thought it was fine. Louisville managed to get, despite all the kind of the turmoil and whatnot, they got a very experienced coach who has proved himself power conference, but he's put very consistent top 15, 20, 25 level products on the field, got a one seed this year. I think that's about as good as they were going to do, and they locked it down. So, I mean, good on them for that.
Okay, the existing teams in this tournament, you've got your Final Four, Loyola of Chicago, and Michigan. You had that, right? Because I remember that discussion.
Definitely, yeah. Actually, I did have Michigan, I believe, if I remember correctly. My bracket has not done too badly, considering I lost one of my finalists, Arizona, in the first round. Yeah. I should not be doing as well as I am, but I'm you know, like top 20, I think, top 25 in the Rock'em Nation pool. Not bad.
All right. Yeah, well, I followed the advice, and I lost Arizona as well.
See, I had to take somebody down with me.
Yeah, well, you did, and I felt that pull right away as Arizona kind of gave up on that particular contest.
Yeah, that was not quite the effort I expected to see there.
Well, no, it certainly wasn't. It was an effort befitting of needing new shoes. You got number 11 Loyola Chicago, number 3 Michigan. Loyola has demonstrated the ability to not get really flustered by what is happening, play sound defense, work that inside-out game, and just continue to grind. Do they have enough playmakers to stand up to Michigan, or is this something that Michigan in the last like 5 or 6 minutes of that ball game after the under 8 break is just going to out-athlete them and pull away?
Right. I mean, this isn't the most, you know, in terms of athleticism, I think they could have done a lot worse in terms of who they drew in the Final Four. But, you know, this is probably the best defensive team that John Beilein's had. I don't think probably. I think it's by far the best defensive team. And so it is going to be a stretch in that regard. Loyola's offense has been kind of incredible the last few games. The ball movement, they've shown their ability to, you know, they don't rebound all that well. They turn the ball over a decent amount. They just generate really good shots and make them. And so that's obviously going to be a challenge for Michigan. But then, you know, the way Michigan's been playing offense of late as well has just been pretty incredible. I think the one thing, if you're Loyola, the one thing you can really find, I think, to kind of just get hopeful about is the fact that this Michigan team shoots a lot of three-pointers and doesn't always make them. They've been making a lot more of them of late, especially early in games, but in theory that doesn't have to continue. And if they don't, if Michigan doesn't make a bunch of shots early on and kind of build the 10-point lead that they seem to have just built into every single game they played for the most part, then, I mean, they're going to have a very good shot because, I mean, nothing is going to faze them, clearly. They have no problem grinding and grinding and grinding and taking their opportunities when they come. So I'm going to pick Michigan because I think Michigan's really good at this point. But Loyola's going to give themselves a shot, I think.
Bill, one of my favorite passages from Mitch Albom's Fab Five book, one of my favorite college basketball books, was talking about when the freshmen walked out to the Final Four, and just the noise was different than anything else, even the regionals or the round of 64 or big, you know, conference matchup, Michigan State or Indiana or something, that just the spectacle of it all. Is that something that overawes or takes out Loyola before they even step on the court or before the ball's even tipped, I guess?
It's always possible when you have this kind of celebratory thing, you know, this joyous rise that they've made over these last couple of weeks. There's always a chance that, number one, you just kind of hit an emotional wall. Like, never mind the environment or anything else. You just kind of run out of steam emotionally. And that can always happen because, I mean, that was a heck of a celebration we saw on the court when they beat Kansas State the other day. So, yeah, maybe that was it for them. But, Michigan wasn't in the Final Four last year. So it's not like, you know, there's, other than Beilein having been there himself, there's not just a ton of different levels of experience here for Michigan or Loyola when it comes to the Final Four. Obviously, Michigan's played in a lot more big environments, but, I mean, they might be a little, you know, again, they have to make their jumpers to play as well as they have been. And you know, in the big Final Four type environment, sometimes you don't get your range very well. So it could go either way. I am trying to be optimistic about Loyola's chances. Like I said, I think Michigan wins, but I would be surprised if Loyola is just overawed by the situation, at least.
All right, so you're not picking the 11 seed to make it to the Final Four for the championship game for the first time ever.
Right. I mean, it's not like I picked him to get this far, so what do I know?
All right, well, betting against the nun. That's all right, I did too, because I had them going out very early on. All right, the other side of that bracket, you got Villanova, one of the best-dressed coaches in college basketball, Jay Wright, going up against the toupee-laden Kansas Chickenhawks with their, you know, their clogs and that fake mascot of theirs. How the heck did Kansas get this far?
It really is hilarious. Just like the it's like a supply and demand curve in terms of expectations and performance in the tournament for Kansas through these last few years, or really most of the Self era, what 2008 aside, I guess. You write them off. That is exactly what they look for. They like playing it with a chip on their shoulder and whatnot, but they don't really get that opportunity since they're winning the Big 12 every year. So, they played really well. I did not expect them, getting to the Elite Eight. I mean, they are the one seed still, but I did not expect them to play as well as they did against Duke. Duke was one of the more impressive teams over the last 2, 3, 4 weeks of the season, and I just kind of assumed that would be a 6-8-10 point win for the Blue Devils. So congratulations to them for playing one of their better games and really being one of the best teams in the country over the last month. It's not like they were an 11 seed who barely got in or anything, but this was still a very limited team that had to figure itself out, and it took them a little while to do so. So congrats. I don't think they'll beat Villanova, but I didn't think they'd beat Duke either. So once again, we always gravitate back towards what the heck do I know?
Okay, well, and I was going to ask you about your championship game, Michigan, and if it is indeed Michigan and Villanova, what's the storyline to watch in that one?
I mean, the storyline, again, shooting is going to be a very, very big thing there. Both teams play better defense than maybe their reputation suggests, but they both like those outside shots. Mm-hmm. There is such randomness baked into that you never really know who's going to be on and off. But they've been maybe it's the two most balanced teams in the tournament, or really in the weeks leading up to the tournament, too, and it's really been fun to watch them. I think the difference is just the Villanova's better. They're really, really good. They've been really, really good for most of the year, and Michigan only kind of turned it on here late after losing, what was the last game they lost? Northwestern, I believe. So, I'll bet on the team that's actually been playing at this level for longer, and so give me Villanova. But, yeah, it's going to be – I'm really Loyola making the finals would be amazing. Kansas less so, but a Villanova-Michigan game, just give me that right now. That sounds like a lot of fun, okay. I think.
Loyola-Kansas could be heartbreaking for one.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not.
No? Okay. Wow, running away from that one. Holy cow. Try not to pull a hamstring on that one,
yeah,
or tear your MCL, and then you and Salvi – their rehab
right.
notes.
And as far as the Royals go, you got the title that and as we've learned, that means like 25 straight years of crazy stupid bounces, but you got the title at least.
Does that you feel better now, Jay?
No. No, not in the least.
Well, I tried.
All right,
that's
well,
all right.
Nice try, Bill. I appreciate the effort.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to the Closers here alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young. Happy to have his waterlogged body back again.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good vacay.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Does your RV know how to swim now?
It's learning. It's got floaties.
It's got little floaties on. They call them tires.
Oh, okay.
Jeez.
Well, mine are pink and shaped like ducks, so it makes highway travel a little interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, Bill Conley, I think, has stuck around through that little exciting banter. Oh, man. At least his RV would be easy to find on the highway. Just look for the rubber duckies as he goes on down the highway. All right, Missouri basketball. Michael Porter Jr. on Monday via Instagram, which I guess that's all the kids are doing now, right? Kids these days, yeah. They're not holding press conferences and accommodating us older people with an actual hold-in-your-hand press release. It's an Instagram kind of thing. By the way, nice profile shot about the 20-second mark as it the camera panned across the room and caught him in profile. All right, we knew he was going to go. We're thinking that Jonte declares, gets the feedback, and holds back. But that seems to be changing if what I'm reading from Sam is right, and even Matthew over at Rock M, they're kind of reading these tea leaves. What are they? What are the tea leaves and chicken bones telling you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like over the last week, everything that the sources, like that Sam Snelling sources have said, I mean, it's the same as other sources within the Mizzou media basically saying that, maybe we were thinking initially that he declares, doesn't sign an agent, gets his feedback, and then there's like a 70 to 80% chance he returns. Okay. Now, thinking that's more like 30% chance he returns, just based on everything. things change. You know, a week ago or a week and a half ago, it was, you know, Michael Porter Jr. seriously considering coming back, and that didn't last very long. So this could change a few times, and we know Jonte Porter is very good at taking every possible second to make his decision, and that's very frustrating as a fan, but I commend him for it. So this could still twist and turn, but it does sound like it's more likely than maybe we thought a week ago.
That he
leaves and stays gone, I should say.
That would open up scholarships three, or you know, well, all are, with Michael Porter, that's number three. With Jonte goes, that is number four. It's kind of a package deal, because I'm guessing that there's really not a whole lot of reason for senior to stick around for a while, because his youngest playing basketball at Tolton just got started over there. So with all of that, what's the leave behind, the instant reaction leave behind from the Porters spending a year here and creating all kinds of drama, intrigue, and medical issues?
Right. Yeah, there were certainly some medical issues. But, the legacy, you know, it wasn't – maybe it doesn't end up being as big and broad as we hoped initially. You know, Michael Porter didn't come in, average 25 points a game, and, you know, lead Missouri to the promised land. But there's – you know, just think back to where this was a year ago, or like a year and 2 weeks ago, you know, coming off of an eight-win season. Even, like, in the rumors about, you know, Konzo Martin being hired, you're like, okay, well, maybe that's something, if he can do this, 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 and this. And now you're a year later, you're coming off of a tournament bid. And so that was Konzo Martin deserves obviously a lot of credit for that, but there's no question that the recruiting, the shot in the arm that the Porter family brought to the table, Michael Porter Jr. commits, which certainly helps with Jeremiah Tillman flipping his commitment, and maybe helps a little bit with Cassius Robertson coming aboard and instead of other offers that maybe he received as a graduate transfer. And then, of course, Jonte, and then, of course, all the ticket sales. So even if it was just a temporary shot in the arm instead of some long-term impact, it was still a shot in the arm. It was still a very impressive boost that the Porter family overall gave. I am curious about Michael Sr., because this is a kind of a, you know, if Jonte does leave or whatever, we can say he has nowhere to go and whatnot, but it is kind of maybe a weird time to find a decent assistant job. So I'd be kind of curious what ends up happening with him. You know, you do figure nothing, not as much as holding him in the area, but still got a daughter going to school, still got, or going to Mizzou, I should say, and so maybe he sticks around for a year. But it'll be interesting to see. The legacy is a legacy, for sure, even if it wasn't quite what Michael Porter Jr. envisioned or anybody else.
Michael Porter Jr. leaves and Jonte decides, you know, what does that do for recruiting? I mean, Watson, Santos, and Pickett all committed and signed basically with knowing that MPJ was a one and done and Jonte was probably up in the air. But Pinson at one point tweeted out a starting five for next year that included MPJ as part of his Twitter stream during the recruitment process. And then with Ramey, I mean, he obviously wants to go to some sort of contender. I think his family has made that pretty clear. And, you know, if both Porters end up leaving, where's the sales job fall for Konzo Martin to finalize this 2018 class?
I mean, I think the sales job for trying to bring Courtney Ramey to town is, you know, A, look what we did in a year. And yes, that had a lot to do with people who aren't here anymore. But look what we were able to accomplish in a single year. We've got Torrance Watson aboard. We're in good shape with the 2019 guys as well. We're a quote-unquote rising power in all this. We're starting to harness the power of the state of Missouri when it comes to recruiting, which would be pretty incredible considering all the times that hasn't happened through the years, I guess. But rising power and on the move and all this stuff, but also we desperately need a point guard. That would be the other part of his sales job, where he can be, Courtney Ramey can come in and really play a high number of minutes for a potentially good team very quickly. Next year's team is going to be really, with or without Ramey, it's going to be interesting just in that, like, you know, not necessarily good or bad interesting, but just the personality shift that can occur in 1 year. Not only losing Jonte Porter potentially, but just losing your best three-point shooters from a team that shot three-pointers very well. And then Jonte, of course, making whatever it was, 36% or so of his threes. The personality shift in this team, for better or worse, is going to be pretty dramatic, and it'll be interesting to see exactly, well, I mean, obviously, Ramey is still on the table, maybe a grad transfer for me too. We'll have to see how a lot of chips still to fall over these next couple of months. But it'll be a very different team. Good or bad, it'll be different.
to play devil's advocate here, if I'm Courtney Ramey or if I'm his parents, I go, well, but wait a minute, you had Blake Harris and you had C.J. Roberts,
right.
They both pulled the ripcord and exited the program. What's to prevent, you know, or why should I join your program knowing that you had two point guards and they both left?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that's, you know, knowing that, you know, Ramey seems like a pretty smart kid and his dad's been very heavily involved. It sounds like, I'm guessing that's a question they've asked many times. So if Missouri's still a contender, then maybe they got a good answer for that question. But he's still got a lot of good teams on the table, teams that have been more successful than Missouri of late. And so it's going to be an interesting closing job here. We'll see if Martin can pull it off. There's no question. I mean, there are plenty of ways that devil advocate can attack this situation. But, you know, Missouri's got more cards to play than they did a year ago, that's for sure.
Yeah, and they might actually have more ticket sales than they did 2 years ago.
That's right.
You can't do better than you did last year, so
that's right.
Which is somewhat unfortunate for the poor people who have to meet a quota over at the sales department. So, so basketball will continue on, especially the recruiting trail as mid-April they get those national letter of intents can be signed. Let's switch over to softball. Gina Fogue, the interim coach, and it has been let's just say it's been an odd year. For the ladies on the diamond. They are set to host the SEC tournament. Will they be a part of the tournament that they're hosting?
Man, it is so hard to stay to keep your head above water when you're a decent team in the SEC. I think, you know, Missouri is a decent team. We've got the RPI, you know, doesn't really tell us what we think it does about quality, but it's a reminder that Missouri's played a ridiculous schedule so far. And is still slightly above 500 at least with it. But it is tough. I mean, there's just not an off weekend from this point forward. It's almost like every single weekend is against a team in the top 10 or 12 or 15 or so. And so we'll see. I mean, it's about resilience for this team. They've shown that they can compete, at least start to, you know, win one out of three against the really, really, really good teams and put themselves in a position to potentially win a series against the teams that are only top 25 or 30 good. But yeah, they've got there's some ground to make up here, or at least they can't lose any more ground, and it's not going to get any easier. So that's not a very optimistic answer, but it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, well, because they've got number 10 LSU coming into town. They missed an opportunity this past weekend when they were down at Arkansas, dropping two out of three to the Razorbacks. If you're, and I know you're not, but if you're in Jim Stirk's shoes right now, What are you looking for out of this team or out of the coaching staff that would make you want to keep Gina?
You know, I mean, I think basically the resilience is going to be the thing. Like, they're not going to have an amazing record, but they don't necessarily have to if their competitiveness level doesn't fall off. That's going to be the trickiest thing. You think back to Ole Miss football last year with Matt Luke. They were, what, 6-6, I believe, at the end of the year. They were banned from a bowl, but the simple fact that he continued to have them playing really, really hard, even as, you know, they drop a couple games early that they maybe shouldn't have, or they get rocked by Alabama and whatnot, but they never fell apart. When you got an interim coach, it's a very good opportunity to just kind of pack it in after a while. And so if she can prevent them from doing that and keep them at or around 500, or you know, especially reach the SEC tournament, those are very solid accomplishments given the circumstances. If he thinks there's a better name out there, then that's fine, but she'll have proven a decent amount by doing that.
Okay. Bill Conley, Rockham Nation, SB Family of Nations. You can follow him on Twitter at SBN underscore Bill C. So that's softball, one diamond sport. The other diamond sport, baseball, well, they didn't get rained out, but the field was unplayable today, so they didn't get the game in with the Leathernecks. So it's now off to Auburn to take on the Auburn Tigers. Baseball ranked number 22.
Yeah.
Pitching staff has done really, really well. What's been the most impressive part for you in year two of Steve Beazer?
Yeah, the pitching has been really, I mean, obviously we've seen a lot of patience at the plate. The offensive numbers are good. Their ability to score early in games has been very nice. But the pitching staff, we had a lot of questions about the depth of the pitching staff coming into this year. And it's been so good that they can win games on Friday or Saturday or Sunday. And then they can also win midweek. The midweek games, the Miami win, the Wichita State win, those are very impressive RPI type resume wins those are the type of wins that can really pay off for this team. Missouri has hurt itself so many times over the last few years, and you know, maybe staying competitive in this SEC series or that SEC series, but then dropping a game to like SEMO in the middle of the week, or Arkansas Pine Bluff or teams like that, and their ability to kind of avoid that so far has been really nice to see. And it does speak to depth, because those midweek Johnny Holstaff games, that'll test your pitching staff pretty pretty well, and so far they've responded really, really nicely.
Well, it also tests your pitching, your starters on Friday, Saturday, knowing that, you know, hey, I've got to go 7 or 8 just to give the bullpen a break.
Right.
The rearrangement of the starters from last week with Tolkien getting the start, or Sycamore rather, getting the start on Friday, then Plassmeyer, and then Montez de Oca going on Sunday. Do you like that rearrangement? It kind of seemed like it switched the dynamic and the energy of this team a little bit this past weekend.
Yeah, Sycama, you know, it's such a weird thing when maybe your best starter is also maybe your best reliever.
Yeah.
And it seemed like at the beginning of the year, Beazer was trying to get a little creative, see if he could have a nice rotation in place to where Sycama could just kind of come in and fight fires, you know, multiple times. Made a lot of sense, but I really like him as a starter. And so if this is the way things end up, you know, Montez de Oca, for all his strength, does throw a lot of pitches, doesn't necessarily make it that far in the game all the time. He had a couple really nice outings early in the year, but if this kind of arrangement works really well for saving the bullpen and, you know, getting Sycamore as involved as possible, then, you know, it sounds great to me. It certainly worked well last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, except they played a lot of extra innings.
Yeah, again,
oh
with
goodness.
The test of depth. They've had lots of tests of depth so far, and they've more or less passed.
Okay, well, it's a team that is loaded with bats, balls, and number two pencils then, apparently, right now for all of this. I want to switch over to football real quick. I know we got a little bit of time left with you here, but just your read on what you're hearing out of spring camp for this Missouri Tiger football team. Is there a different vibe than maybe in previous years?
Well, the most impressive vibe to me is that they're just under the radar, just floating right along with as little attention as possible. I know coaches always kind of prefer it that way, but it has been about the quietest spring I can remember. And I think part of that is because there aren't a lot of questions. Good or bad, we've only got a couple of questions and we know we're not going to get them answered for a while. You know, what does Derek Dooley's offense actually look like? Well, I think by now we know we're not going to see much, you know, in practice reports. The spring game is going to be pretty minimal, you know, just a few little bells and whistles here and there. And then it's going to keep developing over the next few months. But otherwise, you know, defensive end and what, safety, I guess, are question marks. And maybe we learn a little bit of that in the spring. But it has been quiet. I think part of that has been because basketball has actually been, you know, Mizzou fans have actually been paying attention to basketball into March for the first time in a while, and that's kind of sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the room. But I am really, it really has been quiet, and maybe that's just good because that means nobody's getting hurt, but that's been the major thing. Everybody likes Derek Dooley. He's a great quote. He seems to be working well with the players. He seems to like what he's got. Otherwise, I don't know much of anything that we've learned so far.
Yeah, exactly. Is it just from a kind of guesstimation? I know you're not to the SEC yet in your previews, and you're not there yet. But just kind of an identity for this team. I mean, you switched defensive coordinator midstream last year, though it was pretty much in the hands of the head coach anyway. And then, you know, you bring in a new offensive coordinator this year. Is there a feel for what this team will be out on the field next year?
I mean, I think it'll be a good team. You know, it's, you know, from a projection standpoint, I think my numbers have them like 29th or something like that. Lots and lots of returning production, solid experience. I think the most interesting thing about this fall is the number of games that are going to be in that like 40 to 70% win probability range. There's going to be a lot of them. This isn't like last year where it was some really hard games and then really easy games and whatnot. There's going to be a lot of games that Missouri could very easily win or lose. And it's going to be interesting to see the role that Derek Dooley plays in that, the kind of the decisions they make throughout the course of tight games. You know, in theory, if things go well with Dooley, they're going to be kind of not that they were one-trick pony kind of offense last year, but there are going to be more tricks than there were last year if things are going well. And it'll be really interesting how they operate in close games. There were only like two close games all of last year. This year there's going to be a lot more, and I don't think anybody really knows how they're going to respond to that.
With Derek Dooley as the offensive coordinator, are you more concerned about the plays called or the plays executed?
Well, I guess called just because he's never been an offensive coordinator.
Right.
And he's really he's taken the approach that I think I would prefer at this stage in the game, which is basically like he doesn't have any set idea of here's my system, my quote-unquote system. It's basically what do we have, what do we do well, you know, what can we figure out over these next few months, and that's great. But when you're more of a system disciple, you know what your go-tos are. You know which directions you're going to go in key times. And Derek Dooley probably doesn't even know what he's going to go to in key times yet, because his system is going to be kind of patched together over these next few months. So that's a little bit of a concern. He hasn't called plays. He doesn't quite know what plays he's got to call just yet. And I mean, we'll see exactly how that goes, but that could backfire, obviously.
All righty. Bill Connolly, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. The next conference preview to go up at SB Nation to Zoom.
San Jose State just went up, just started the Mountain West, so tomorrow is Hawaii Day.
Oh, wow. There you go.
So I'll have to schedule it at like 4 p.m. just so, you know, when they're waking up in Hawaii, that they'll be able to read it.
The Rainbow Warriors.
Yes.
Are they the Rainbow Warriors?
No, I think they brought the Rainbow back.
Back. Excellent.
Hey, quick thing before we get you out of here, Bill. The 3-on-3 tournament was announced. Cassius Robertson going to represent Mizzou. Do we get to do trifectas on the 3-on-3 games?
I mean, I'm pretty sure I know who will make the trifecta for the 3-on-3 game.
Okay, very good.
Sure, if you want to give it a shot, you go right ahead.
Okay, very good.
Okay, great. Another opportunity for me to play the loser honer for me. That'll be just delightful. All right, well, you gave him another opportunity. See, you just gave Jay hope. He's totally forgot about Salvador Perez and the Kansas City Royals.
Who?
He had.
Yes. Well,
who?
See? He's doing well. Good work on that one, Bill. Thank you.
No problem.
All right. Thanks much. Have a great rest of the week.
Yep.
All right. Bill Connolly, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations. And we will be right back after we take care of a little bit of business.
The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to the Closers here. I think we got things buttoned up for the rest of the hour. Grab a piece of wood, rabbit's foot, something. There, okay. We're good.
All the things.
Oh, man, all the talismans, which is something that probably Salvador Perez should have been carrying instead of his luggage. Don't you get rookies to do that?
He was at his house.
I don't care. Call up a rookie.
Yeah. Doesn't really work that way, but okay.
Well, how old is his child? How old's the baby?
He's not ready to carry.
Well, he's crawling, right?
Probably.
Okay. You'd stack him up like an elephant. It saves your MCLs. If you missed it a little bit earlier at the top of the hour, it came out Jeffrey Flanagan, Salvador Perez. Pulled a dumb move. Slips and falls? Was that?
He was walking up steps and missed a step.
I hate it when the contractor comes in and adds an extra step where you weren't expecting it. But tears what, the MCL?
Mm-hmm. 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. Okay, so your backup plan was Drew Butera. Are you now all of a sudden going, alrighty, we need something different because Drew Butera does not bring to the Royals what Salvador Perez did.
If it was ACL, if it was season long, then sure, yeah. Okay. Obviously, you'd have to go do something like that. For 4 to 6 weeks, in a season when you're just kind of muddling along for whatever that is, then you patch it together and get going.
Okay, so 4 to 6 weeks and then probably a rehab assignment, so it could be April, May, sometime end May, first part of June.
Yeah.
Get him back.
Yep.
Get Salvador Perez back from a torn MCL from carrying luggage and skipping a step. Or missing the extra step that was added. I blame it on the contractor.
That's the way it works sometimes.
That's right. Yep. The contractor came in and added that seventh step, didn't bother to tell anybody, and unfortunately he added that seventh step right in between steps 4 and 5. Perez, 4 to 6 weeks, or about 4 weeks or so on the shelf, plus the rehab assignment. Danny Duffy, what's your hope for the Duffer this year?
A Brewers uniform.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All
right,
Okay. Very good. What about Ian Kennedy? Moving right along as we work our way through the rotation.
I mean, it's hard for me to see that you have the long, like we've talked about with David Leskie.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to damage the 2020 or 2021 Royals.
Okay.
In 2018. That's your goal,
that's
right?
That's the group
now.
That's currently either in the minors or on the draft list.
Or free agents on other teams. Yeah. I mean, that's you know, but if a player on the Royals team this year is not in the 2021 Royals plans, then I want the Royals to get everything they can out of them. And whether that's an 8-war Cy Young season or 6 prospects at the deadline, I want the Royals to get everything they can out of every player on the 2018 roster that's not part of the 2021 Royals.
Okay.
It's The Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to The Closers. Here's a wrap up the hour. Thanks to our guest today, Mitchell 40 from PowerMizzou.com. You can find him on Twitter at Mitchell4D. The number 4, the letter D. Mitchell40. On Twitter, read the work at PowerMizzou.com as well. That will allow Gabe to rest much more peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Bill Conley from Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations, on Twitter at SBN_BillC. NFL's Competition Rules Committee has been meeting a part of the owners' meetings going on this week, where we got some of those delightful nuggets of sound. One of those has been in consultation with the NCAA, and I know we talked about this. I think it was last year that you know, don't be surprised that the NFL works with the NCAA to talk about their targeting penalty and how to enforce it on the NFL level. Well, they've gone ahead and done it. You've got a 15-yard penalty on helmet-to-helmet. If you lower your head to initiate contact with the helmet against an opponent, you're subject to a 15-yard penalty and a potential ejection. Player ejection rules have also been altered. The league's officiating office can, upon review, eject a player. And a lot of that grew out of the hit on Rob Gronkowski last year, where he was just laid out. And everyone's like, how come he wasn't ejected? Why wasn't he ejected? And it was the sole discretion of the official on the field.
Right.
Well, now the league officiating office can overrule that. And the third thing that they've been going at is simplifying the what is a catch definition.
Okay.
You're pre-scoffing.
Yeah, I am very much pre-scoffing.
Okay, here they are.
Okay.
This is going to make this easier now to determine what a catch is.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
One, the receiver must control the ball.
All the way through?
Two, establish himself in bounds.
With control of the ball?
With control of the ball.
Now, I didn't say that.
Well.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know if these are independent.
You're making that. You told me this is going to be easier.
I said it's easier.
Okay.
There's only 3 steps now.
Okay.
And make a football-type move, either taking that third step with possession of the football, assuming that you've already taken the first two. And you could also lunge with the ball, a la Dez Bryant reaching for the end zone. He says he was reaching for the end zone and fumbled the ball. The ball was ruled it was an incomplete catch. That's kind of where that stems out of. But those are the 3 rules. And
still ain't nobody know what a catch is.
Well, and I'm worried about that because define control.
Sure. Define football move. Define establish themselves.
Okay, well, I think inbounds is pretty clear, right?
But establish themselves in bounds.
So are now we talking about the 2 toe tap, right?
Right. Boom, boom. Now, but now is
and
it,
then right out of bounds?
Is it 1 foot? With control? 2 foot?
This is Dr. Seuss.
Right. Is it?
I don't know. It may be. We'll turn our attention to the Cat in the Hat and inquire as to their opinion.
1 catch, 2 catch, red catch, blue catch?
Oh, man. Really? No. No. I don't, it's, again, and thanks to Rick for bringing that up because I knew I wanted to talk about it here today, but it's going to be an interesting, they said it's going to be simpler. I'm not sure how simple it will end up being, especially when you have to define control. Did you establish inbounds and did you make a football type move? Those three pieces are now going to supposed to go together to define a catch. Mm-hmm. Jay Sparks, thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Until then, please be careful out there.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.